Richie Neal, do you like beer?
Well, I think we all do. I think it's part of the American pastime. It's part of our culture.
Yeah, but it's pounds. It's fattening, isn't it?
Well, there are variations, as you know.
I don't drink it myself. I don't like it. But you do, right? Yeah, you like beer. And I understand there's a thing hanging around called the craft brewer's tax cut. What's that?
Well, there's been a revolution in terms of domestic beer consumption and in terms of domestic beer production. And many of these small craft brewers have been very successful. And an amazing statistic, I think, is that the largest small craft brewer in America is now Sam Adams, and they produce only about 2 million barrels a year. It doesn't come close to what the larger foreign competitors produce. But if you travel anywhere across the country today, you can see
sure.
what craft brewing has done. They're all over the place. They're new. They're innovative. And the truth of the matter is they tastes very good.
I'm told we have a great one in Great Barrington. I guess there are some advantages to them, right, in terms of pasteurization and other things. Am I just talking out of
the head? Think that's part of, I think, the thrill. And I'm a runner.
Yeah.
And as a runner, I certainly have enjoyed domestic and foreign beers over many, many years. And what we're trying to do here is to acknowledge that there are 2,300 small and independent craft brewers across the country.
And so what do you want to do, give them a tax cut?
Well, actually, to encourage them to produce more and at the same time treat them on a fair basis in terms of tax exposure. And I think that what we're suggesting here is that the rate that was established in 1976 has not kept pace with current realities for small and large brewers in America. So what I'm suggesting with this, which is a bipartisan bill, that even though they only produce about 6% of the beer that's sold nationwide, many of them have offered key investments in local communities, and mm-hmm. we're suggesting simply that a graduated beer excise tax rate of $3.5 to small brewers would actually allow them to raise the ceiling and qualify for small brewer rates, including from 2 million barrels of production to 6 million barrels. It's actually a minor modification.
Okay. Richie, here you are, my expert on all things Irish. And do the Irish like beer, or do they like harder stuff?
Well, I think that they've been consumers of beer, as many Europeans are. The British, the Germans, and the Irish are beer consumers. And as you note, the French and the Italians, they lean more toward the idea of wine. But you could have great brews if you traveled to Brussels, for example.
Yep.
And what's noteworthy about it is, in many European capitals, unlike America, what you will find with beer production is people actually sit and enjoy one or two beers over a long, long period of time. Our culture promotes the idea, as you know, whether it's the Super Bowl or major athletic events, of consuming ice-cold beer in a matter of minutes, and that is really not the case with European brewers. They are more geared toward long conversation, largely because I think that they put great value on that cultural tradition.
When we were in Galway last, we went into a place and I felt compelled to buy a beer. I don't drink beer. And that beer just sat in front of me for a long time.
Well, you're a good conversationalist, so you would have had a chance to talk to people for a long time, and that's precisely what they do. They don't rush home to watch TV, as you know.
Yeah.
And instead, entertainment for them is based upon the course of conversation and the use and the application of words.
So tell me about the AMT. This is real interesting. I got trapped years ago. I don't think I'll ever be out of it. But what exactly is the alternative minimum tax? And we've talked about this before. And what did you do? I understand you've had some success.
Well, the alternative minimum tax is more correctly described as minimum tax. And it was based upon a finding in the very late 60s, that there were a number of families in America who, although they generated significant amounts of money, paid no income tax. So the idea was that you would provide an alternative system for them or assess them with what is known as a minimum tax.
Now, they paid no tax, I'm sorry to interrupt, because there are all these special deals you can get within the income tax code.
They took advantage of different deductions. That would be one example. They would have taken advantage in some instances perhaps of offshoring, but the idea was to park income that would be beyond the reach of the IRS. And the result was, with the agreement of 369 members of the House of Representatives and only two against in 1969, to assess a minimum tax. And the problem is that as the minimum tax was assessed, it was never indexed for inflation. So middle-income people found themselves ensnared by the alternative minimum tax, And in 1998, I filed legislation to rid the system of alternative minimum tax and have stayed at it year after year, held hearings,
right,
produced great witnesses, and we came to the conclusion that, in fact, minimum tax, because it was never intended to hit middle-income people, should be done away with. And I had a chance to congratulate Vice President Biden for the decision to rid the code of it for middle-income people. So chances are pretty good now that you will never pay minimum tax again if you're a middle-income American. And in fact, 28 million families will never pay alternative minimum tax again. And in Massachusetts, 1 million families will never pay alternative minimum tax again.
Well, will you remind me about what that middle income range is?
Well, I think in this instance, again, it would depend on the number of dependents you have in the home, but I think you're pretty safe.
None.
Inside of $350,000 of annual income, you would not be paying minimum tax again.
So even if you were paying minimum tax up to now, and you fall within under that $350,000, you don't have to pay any more, even though you were paying in the past.
That's exactly right. And in addition to which, remember that one of the problems with minimum tax was that your accountant did two separate calculations, or the individual did two separate calculations,
right,
and you paid the higher calculation.
For example?
For example, if you did the calculation and you assessed ordinary income at a prescribed rate, only to discover that the minimum tax requirement meant that you paid at a higher rate, you would pay the higher rate.
You must be, in the Yiddish vernacular, kvelling that you got this thing through.
Oh, I'm thrilled. I feel very strongly. I had a chance that day to do some gloating, if you might use the term, with Nancy Pelosi when I pointed out that she congratulated me. She said, I know you've been at this for at least 15 years.
Wow.
And sometimes in Congress, 15 years it takes to get something of this magnitude accomplished.
Richie, didn't they need the money, though, that this thing was bringing in?
Well, they needed the money, but the truth is that as part of income tax reform, which I think is going to happen this year, we will figure out, as we try to broaden the base and flatten the rates everywhere, how we can accomplish the same a number of dollars in terms of revenue without the onerous minimum tax.
Well, Richie Neal, always great to talk to you. And when we come back the next time, I'll ask you about how things are going in the new part of the district where I live.
Happy to do it, and thanks for the time.